Penguin Random House Canada presents Nobody Asked for This by Georgia Taves. Read for you by the author. For Mark, thanks for laughing at all my jokes and FVS. Coping takes a fuck ton more effort and energy than thriving ever will. Hannah Gadsby, 10 Steps to Nanette. Chapter 1. You didn't get me a coffee? Haley asked me. She was coming out of the washroom while I was still taking off my jacket and boots, and now she stood there wrapped in her towel, squinting at my lone coffee on the kitchen counter. I thought I was being polite. Instead of forcing her out of the shower prematurely, I had run to Jimmy's Coffee across the street and shit in their bathroom. The coffee was only to keep up appearances and to justify the use of their bathroom. I know, but it's $2. You could have got two, and we both would have had coffee. Okay, but there's coffee here. But now it's stupid to make a whole pot for one person. She was genuinely upset. This was a real moment of suffering for her. All I could do was throw my hands up in the air and continue to stuff the arm of my coat with my hat and mitts. It would just be nice to have nice things done for me. She was almost yelling and beginning to tear up. Somehow I was the villain in this story, when all I was trying to do was take a shit and not bother anyone. Okay, you want to split this? I asked her. No, you have cream. Then just make coffee. I will drink more from the pot. She held up a hand, the one that wasn't clutching one of the towels that she stole from a gas station when we were 17. It had a mouse surfing on it for reasons I've never understood. We'd been on our way to a friend's pool party and had forgotten to bring towels, so she tucked them under her baby doll tank top while I paid for gas and our Slurpees. I remember her saying we were even, which to her meant she didn't have to pay me back for her share of the gas or for her Slurpee because she got us these towels. She liked stealing things, especially gifts for other people, as if the element of personal risk gave the gift more value. She clung to her stolen towel and continued to hold up her free hand towards me as she walked down the short hallway to her room, muttering under her breath that she wasn't going to make me coffee. I had ruined whatever good mood she was in. I would have gotten her a coffee, except I had no idea how long she would be. It would have been frustrating getting her a small black coffee, knowing it was getting cold as she exfoliated and shaved, etc. Then she would have felt bad if her coffee went cold, which also would have ruined her good mood. Probably. I'd become very good at justifying my rationale when I was made to feel guilty. It was a good survival technique, since I always seemed to feel guilty about something. The conversation felt unresolved, so I didn't go to my room. Instead, I sat on the couch drinking my selfish coffee and picking at the dry bits of skin on my palms, waiting for Haley to come out of her room. I tore my hands a lot at my CrossFit gym because I didn't know when to let go of the barbell. The trainer said not to death grip the bar, but I always did. So the blisters that formed tore open and bled, but eventually dried to hardened bits of skin that I really enjoyed picking at. While I picked, Haley came out of her room and went to the kitchen to make coffee. I watched her reflection on the TV screen. She was leaning on the counter and staring at the toaster while her half pot of coffee was brewing. I couldn't help but think she'd only made half a pot so I couldn't have any extra coffee on top of my Jimmy's, which defeated her entire argument that a whole pot was too much, because she always had the option to make less. But I didn't want to point this out because I needed her to be nice to me today. I was stressed out about my set at Comedy Bar that evening. I knew she wouldn't come to the show because she never came to my shows. I got mad once or twice when she first moved in and said she would come and see me all the time, but never came. Now I was grateful for the separation, church and state. I could lie if I needed to, for my ego. Tell her I did well when really I bombed. I didn't need her to think I was funny, but I liked to remind her that other people did. I didn't go to her birthday dinner last year because of a show, but it was a big one, the show, and she'd have birthdays every year. Plus, she had her party on a Thursday, which was the day of her actual birthday, but it would have been easier for everyone if she had had it on the Friday or Saturday. Then she wouldn't have been so upset that most people left after dinner instead of going out dancing. I knew I should complain less because truly that was all I did on stage, so why not just keep it there and spend the rest of my life at peace and unbothered and meditate if something was really getting to me? I got a free consultation with an online therapist who told me I should meditate to deal with all my stresses. I told this ChatGPT therapist, maybe it was a real person, I can't be sure, that my stresses included lingering sadness about my dead mom and my fear of wasting my life being a modern-day clown, and also my worry that I was an undiagnosed sociopath because Haley so often told me I had sociopathic tendencies, in a lighthearted way, but I was starting to believe her. Meditation. That was the computer therapist's suggestion. So I figured therapy wasn't for me. Somewhere along the way, it must have been funny, my cynicism. And now it probably wasn't. Nat was probably the worst thing about me, except that I'd built a bit of a career off of it. I would have liked to think I was redeemable. I mean, I wasn't that bad, for a sociopath. I had asked Haley a while ago if I was mean, and she'd said, no, just a robot. Which I countered with the fact that robots weren't generally as sarcastic as I was. And then she changed her mind and said, right, okay, you're mean. Then she'd winked and said, you're always serving cunt. Which I think was a compliment, to be a mean cunt rather than a dull-witted robot. Though if we all lived with robots, I would bet human beings would be nicer to each other, except for the people who got weirdly attached to robots. I knew there were a bunch of real sick fucks just dying to fuck C-3PO. Her coffee finished brewing just as she finished putting together her peanut butter and banana toast. She came and sat beside me on the couch, making a show of putting her breakfast on the coffee table in front of me like it was a real high-class meal. I tried to apologize with words that didn't include sorry. You don't think about food when you have to shit, I started. But if I do, next time I'll get us those breakfast sandwiches. Wallace has better sandwiches, she told me. Yeah, but I would have never made it in time. I felt like we could either argue or move on, and it would very much be dependent on whatever I said next. I didn't move for a good 2 minutes, listening to her eat her breakfast. What would your death song be? I asked her, not making eye contact. What do you mean? Or, what would you like your death song to be? Like Paul Walker got that Charlie Puth song, Biggie got Diddy, Diana got Elton. Say more, she said between bites. What? What are more death songs? Avicii's Heaven or SOS? Too soon? I saw her crack a smile. She didn't generally like my dark humor as much as my, I don't know, gossipy humor. But a terrible suicide joke about the young Swedish DJ got her. That one was actually sad. We both nodded, more for show that we weren't terrible people. It was good to keep up appearances, even in the privacy of your own home. I feel like more people who died should have got songs. She furrowed her eyebrows. These days, she looked much older than 23. Her antidepressants had dried out her skin, causing her once angular face to bloat, and the extra flesh spilled over her jawline and pointed chin, creating a skin scarf that she'd pull at in tears, wondering if it was worth being less suicidal, but, in her words, hideous. She wasn't hideous. She wasn't traditionally beautiful either, but there was a severity about her face that to me screamed, so cool, especially when we first met at 14. She was lighting matches in the bathroom at school, not to smoke, but to melt down her Wet n' Wild coal eyeliner pencil, telling me burning it made it last longer before drawing thick rings around her eyes. I thought she was this Vivian Westwood punk teen, when really she was just self-conscious about her large nose and thought overlining her eyes would help draw attention away from it. She already had breasts and her body was still small and soft in that teenage way that balanced out the tiny lumps on her hips and the teeniest cushion on her belly. She was objectively more feminine than I was, and her self-confidence was always so alarming. I was always wide, blocky, even when I lost weight while my mom was dying. I was 3 inches taller than her, and clothes hung off my broad shoulders like someone had tried to put a sweater on a window frame. I always took up more space. So I was so grateful to her for being my friend, as if she chose me and curated my high school experience all based on a charitable whim beginning in that bathroom. After my parents divorced, my mom and I moved to a new area in Oakville, so I didn't know anyone at that high school. She brought me into her existing friend group, and together we all tried to mirror the fashion and dialects of the teens we watched on Laguna Beach reruns on MTV and navigate our formative years. I'm sure that Glee girl wrote a song about that Glee boy who OD'd. She did. She relaxed her face, focusing on her homemade coffee. That's the worst kind of death song, I think. A musical number. It's like an SNL skit. Like, can you imagine all the Glee kids mashing up Sarah McLachlan's I Will Remember You and, like...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?